Welcome to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is 11 a.m. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Today, we will be reading from the latest edition. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. This is Joanne with Mary reading to you live from Patricia A. Fletcher's studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. Before we begin, we have a PSA announcement. The Worcester Public Library announced the opening of an interactive tactile exhibit at its main branch at 3 Salem Square from July 15th through August 15th. Created by Tactile Images, the exhibit uses patented technology that transforms iconic works of art into three-dimensional tactile renderings, allowing visitors to experience visual information through touch. The exhibit's design, in part, makes visual art more accessible to the blind or visually impaired. The exhibit, Seven Art Movements, examines the evolution of history's art movements through tactile reproductions of works by renowned artists, including Leonardo da Vinci, Johann Vermeer, and Vincent van Gogh. It also explores stylistic characteristics of the Renaissance, Baroque, Neoclassicism, Impressionism, Post-Impressionism, Art Nouveau, and Expressionism. The exhibition features seven tactile images, each paired with a corresponding fine art print. The Worcester Talking Book Library is committed to ensuring that everyone has access to educational and cultural experiences, said Lee Ann Hooley, head of WTBL. This exhibit offers a unique opportunity for individuals who are blind or visually impaired to engage with art in a meaningful way while helping sighted visitors gain a deeper appreciation for accessible design and inclusive programming. Once again, the Worcester Public Library announced the opening of an interactive tactile exhibit at its main branch at 3 Salem Square from July 15th through August 15th. And now I'll hand it over to Mary.
Good morning. The first article I have is Cannabis Repeal Question Makes Ballot After Commission Rejects Appeal. The State Ballot Law Commission on Tuesday overruled an objection to nomination signatures supporting an initiative petition seeking to repeal the state's adult-use recreational cannabis laws and ordered the question to be printed on November's ballot. In a 16-page decision, the commission found that objector Kevin Gilnack, who filed the signatures challenge on behalf of the Stop the Repeal campaign that opposes the ballot question, did not meet the burden of proof to disqualify enough signatures to scrap the initiative petition. In a 7-page objection filed last week, Gilnack contended that numerous signatures were obtained through fraudulent means, were not genuine, were ineligible, excluded required addresses, or included stray marks. As a result, Gilnick said, the committee behind the ballot question did not file the required 12,429 certified signatures. That marked the final batch of signature petitions had to collect after a panel of lawmakers decided that none of the initiative petitions brought before them this year warranted legislative action. The committee backing the initiative petition filed 12,551 certified signatures with the Secretary of State's office, meaning 123 would have to be invalidated to knock the question off the ballot, according to the commission's decision. Commissioners declined to disqualify 231 signatures. Gilnack argued should be invalidated because of stray marks. The commission said that the stray marks appear mostly on the back of the petitions and do not appear to be intentional markings and do not present voters with any information. Instead, They are errant pen marks that have no material effect on the remainder of the content of the petition. Also, the Commission declined to invalidate another 99 signatures Gilnack contended were non-genuine, meaning that one person had signed multiple times. The Commission said Gilnack didn't prove by substantial evidence that the signatures were signed by the same person. Jennifer Nasso, a handwriting expert Gilnack called in as a witness, testified it was inconclusive whether those signatures were signed by the same person, according to the decision. Commissioners said that Nasso's assessment was limited to what is on the petition, like the signature and other printed information, including the signee's address. Nasso testified that some of the printed information on the petition was similar, and that she did not review voter registration records or handwriting samples for any of the 99 signatures challenged as non-genuine. Commissioners also said Gilnack didn't present other evidence to support his argument that the signatures were non-genuine, like testimony from anyone who said they signed another person's name, or that a signature in question was not their signature. Commissioners ruled to invalidate 4 certified signatures that Gilnack challenged because they didn't include necessary addresses, or that the addresses were incomplete. The Commission found Gilnack had shown by substantial evidence those signatures were improperly certified. This is the second challenge to its nomination signature the initiative petition has survived. Also in June, the Supreme Judicial Court ruled that the initiative petition could move forward onto the ballot after opponents had argued that Attorney General Andrea Campbell's summary of the proposal was not fair. Next, Shrewsbury commercial landscaper acquired by a New Jersey firm. Kevin Labadini Corporation, a commercial landscaping and snow removal firm operating in Massachusetts since 1953, has been acquired by a rapidly growing New Jersey firm backed by private equity. Riverview Landscapes, a firm owned by a New York-based private investment firm, Talus Holdings, has purchased Labadini Riverview, announced Tuesday. The acquisition is Riverview's 26th since it was founded in 2022. Financial terms of the purchase were not disclosed. The acquisition was a result of 2 years of discussions with Labadini Corporation, with the purchase helping Riverview expand its presence in New England, said Liam Burrell, CFO of Riverview Landscapes. Beyond New England, Riverview operates in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Labadini Corporation will continue to serve as existing customers, assisted by the support of Riverview's existing location in Hudson. The firm was founded in 1953 by Italian immigrant Philip Labadini and was originally located in Wellesley before moving to Marlborough and eventually to Shrewsbury, according to its website. Philip's grandson Kevin acquired the business in 1992. I have spent 30 years building this business, and choosing the right partner was something I took very seriously, Kevin Labadini said in the announcement. I believe Labadini Corporation will continue to thrive as part of their platform. Talus Holdings' portfolio includes Main Street Auto, an Atlanta-based chain of auto repair shops, and Black Diamond, a Houston-based firm that offers rental equipment to companies in the oil and gas sector. Next, new owner plans apartments at Washington Square office building. After purchasing 2 office buildings near Worcester's Washington Square in April, Ceccaroni Properties plans to demolish one building and convert the other into apartments. Ceccaroni has filed a building demolition delay waiver application with the Worcester Historical Commission, seeking permission to demolish a three-story brick building at 10 Washington Square that dates back to the 1880s. Known as Cooney Block, the building is included in the Massachusetts Cultural Resource Information System, or MACRIS, but is not listed on the State Register or the National Register of Historic Places. A 1992 National Register nomination included in the property's MACRIS file suggests that the building is eligible for listing, but additional information was required. Buildings subject to the pending application, or that are deemed eligible by the Worcester Historical Commission, need approval to receive a demolition delay waiver, according to the city's website. City rules require a delay of 1 year before a historical building is demolished, unless a waiver is obtained. The Cooney Block was built in 1883 and originally used as apartments according to the application materials available through MACRIS. By the 1970s, by the 1970s, it had been converted to commercial uses. The building was vacant in 1992, but was utilized as additional offices by St. Vincent Medical Group prior to its sale. Ceccaroni's WHC application describes the Cooney Block as being in average to poor condition. The building Ceccaroni plans to turn into a multifamily housing is a four-story, 44,180-square-foot structure, most recently used as administrative offices for St. Vincent Medical Group and Metro West Physician Services. Both buildings sit on the same parcel, which was purchased from St. Vincent's for $1.9 million in April. Ceccaroni did not respond to requests for comment. The planned apartments are directly next to a parcel where Fall River-based First Bristol Corporation is planning a 105-room hotel. The company's application for the demolition delay waiver is set to be heard at WHC's July 23rd meeting. Finally, former St. Mary CEO returns to M&T Bank as executive. After leaving as president and CEO of St. Mary's Credit Union, less than 1 year into the job, Grace Lee has landed a new role. Lee has returned to M&T Bank, this time as executive vice president and chief of staff in the office of bank chairman and CEO Renee Jones. She previously served as M&T's executive vice president and Massachusetts regional president from 2022 to 2025. Jeff Carpenter was appointed Lee's former role as Massachusetts regional president in February. I am excited to return to M&T and help advance the priorities that are shaping our future at an organization whose relationship-driven culture aligns closely with my values, Lee said in a statement provided by the bank. Throughout my career, I have been passionate about building partnerships, strengthening communities, and helping organizations create meaningful impact. Lee returns to M&T from Marlborough-based St. Mary's, where she served as CEO and president from August 2025 until July 1st. Jim Petkowicz, who succeeded Lee as president and CEO, said the credit union was surprised by Lee's departure. Buffalo-based M&T required People's United Bank, a Connecticut-based firm with offices in Worcester, as part of a $7.6 billion deal in 2021. The bank is the 23rd largest in central Massachusetts, with $461.5 million in local deposits and $214.2 billion in total assets. And now it's time for our first break.
Are you interested in taking the bus but aren't sure how? Let the Worcester Regional Transit Authority make it easier for you. The WRTA Travel Training Program is designed to help people who would like to use the regular WRTA fixed route bus service but aren't sure where to begin. You can receive instruction on a one-on-one basis, or you may bring a friend or relative and do it together. You decide. You will learn how to read a schedule, understand transit terminology, pay your fare, where to purchase tickets, what to do in case of an emergency, and all things having to do with learning to use public transit. If there is a particular route or routes that you would like to use, the travel trainer will tailor the training to meet your needs. Travel training is free of charge, and while you are with the travel trainer, your trips are free as well. Please call 508-453-3460 to set up an appointment today.
Welcome back to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal. It is 11:16. Worcester property owner hit with $31,000 fine over waste site cleanup violations. The owner of an industrial property in Worcester has received a $31,000 fine for violations of the state's waste site cleanup regulations. Alpha Capital Realty Trust was issued the fine relating to its property at 29 Bluff Street, the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection reported. After Alpha Capital acquired the property in January 2023, MassDEP said it sent five formal notices to the company regarding required actions relating to presence of chlorinated volatile organic compounds in groundwater at the site from previous uses. The property is home to an 8,356-square-foot manufacturing building, according to the City of Worcester property records. Alpha Capital could not be reached for comment. Juan Mendez and Rafael Encarnacion are trustees of the Princeton-based entity. The notices sent to the trust outline the need to hire a licensed site professional and continue site assessment activities initiated by previous owners of the site. John Belling, regional director of the MassDEP Central Regional Office in Worcester, said the property owners are responsible for addressing contamination on their properties regardless of when the contamination occurred. Alpha Capital acquired the site for less than $100 in 2023 from 29 Bluff Street Realty Trust. Next, the MBTA to temporarily cut 8 Worcester Community Rail trips. The MBTA will temporarily suspend 4 inbound and 4 outbound off-peak Worcester Line trains beginning July 27. Several remaining midday trains will have travel times extended by about 5 minutes. The changes are due to scheduled track work between Framingham and Auburndale, according to the announcement from the MBTA and Keolis Community Services, which oversees operations and maintenance for the commuter rail. The changes will be in effect until September. The inbound trains to be cut include the 9:05 a.m., the 11 a.m., the 1:05 p.m., and the 3 p.m. Outbound trains include the 7:30 a.m., 8:55 a.m., 10:50 a.m., and 12:55 p.m. During the service reductions, crews will replace 15 miles of rail, equivalent to 7.5 miles of double-track railroad. The new track will not need to be replaced for at least 25 years. Rush hour service is either direction will not be impacted. Hanover Insurance CEO Roach to retire, Levy named successor. After 20 years at Hanover Insurance Group, John Jack Roach will retire as president and CEO at the end of the year. I will retire at the end of the year with tremendous pride in all our organization has accomplished, Roach said in an announcement from the firm. The company is in a strong financial position and has the exceptional talent needed to drive our business forward. Roach joined Worcester's largest publicly traded company in 2006 and was named its leader in 2017. He frequently appeared on WBJ's Power 100 list of the most influential professionals in central Massachusetts, including this year. Richard Dick Levy has been named CEO-elect by the Board of Directors. Levy is currently Chief Operating Officer of Hanover Insurance and President of Hanover Agency Markets, the firm's main personnel and commercial insurance division. Having worked closely with Dick for more than two decades, I have complete confidence in his leadership and his ability to guide our company forward, Roach said. Levy joined Hanover in 2004. He is a graduate of the College of Holy Cross in Worcester and obtained an MBA from Harvard Business School. He has previously served as the firm's chief marketing officer and chief growth innovation officer. Hanover achieved record earnings under Roach's leadership. In 2025, the company generated $6.6 billion in revenue, up from $4.3 billion when he took over in 2017. The company's net income in 2025 was $663 million. He has driven progress in every dimension of the company, not the least of which is working closely with the board and with Dick to ensure that we have an exceptional CEO to elevate the company to its next level, Hanover Board Chair Cynthia Egan said in a statement. Hanover's stock price sat at $207 per share on the New York Stock Exchange as of Thursday morning, up about 15.7% since the beginning of the year. The stock price is virtually unchanged since the announcement of the CEO succession plan. Next article. Danish shipping giant opening $100 million fulfillment hub in Blackstone Valley. Danish logistics firm A.P. Moller Maersk is opening a new $100 million fulfillment hub in Hopedale, a project expected to create about 1,000 jobs. Located in a building owned by Boston-based developer GFI Partners, the 617,000-square-foot e-commerce center at 75 Plain Street is expected to process up to 330,000 units per day at peak capacity, Maersk announced. Maersk expects the fulfillment center to come online in August, adding to the firm's contract logistics network across North America. The site will serve an undisclosed large-scale e-commerce client of Maersk. GFI Partners bought the site formerly utilized by Rosenfeld Concrete Corp. of Hopedale for $15 million in 2023. Construction on the site started that year and was completed in 2024, according to the real estate data from CoStar. The building features 88 docks, four drive-in bays, and parking for over 206 trailers and over 300 employees, with room for further expansion. The 146-acre site sits 5 minutes away from I-495 and less than 20 minutes from the Massachusetts Turnpike. GFI built the site prior to finalizing a tenant for it. Brian Pinch of the Boston office of Chicago-based Cushman & Wakefield served as a broker for this transaction. Logistics sites located centrally between Boston, Worcester, and Providence have seen high demand. a logistics site in Uxbridge sold for $120 million in February 2025. GFI site at 75 Plain Street received a 2026 assessment of $73.98 million, according to the Town of Hopedale property records. Next, House approves O'Day's wage law carve-out for Woo Sox players. As the big leaguers approached the All-Star break, the Massachusetts House last week took its own swing at baseball, carving minor league players out of the state's wage laws. Tucked in the House Economic Development Bill, H-5576, is language that would exclude minor league baseball players compensated under a collective bargaining agreement from the definition of occupation in the state minimum wage law and from associated daily, weekly hours record-keeping requirements. The language appears to have originated with Representative James O'Day of West Boylston, a Worcester native who represents part of the city. Worcester has seen a boom of development in recent years, encouraged in large part by the 2021 relocation of the Boston's Red Sox AAA affiliate from Pawtucket, Rhode Island. The House unanimously adopted to its economic development bill a consolidated amendment that included language similar to what O'Day had filed as a standalone amendment. O'Day's office did not return a message. Major League Baseball could be headed for another work stoppage when the collective bargaining agreement for big leaguers expires December 1, but the House's language addresses a different negotiation group of the MLB Players Association. Minor leaguers unionized under the MLBPA in 2022 and ratified their first ever CBA in March 2023. A five-year deal with raises guaranteed through 2027. At least nine other states have taken recent similar steps to exclude minor league baseball players from narrow selections of wage and hour laws, according to legislative records. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and California Governor Gavin Newsom signed the first exemptions in 2023. In a press release issued by the California State Senator who sponsored that bill, MLB Deputy Commissioner Dan Halem said the exemption was aimed at protecting salary provisions collectively bargained by owners and players, and that the California law recognizes that both parties agreed in the successful collective bargaining process that being a minor league player is a unique occupation and that players are not well served by being classified as hourly workers. New Hampshire Governor Kelly Ayotte signed a law in June that included a minimum wage exemption for minor league baseball players. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers did the same in December. New Jersey's then Governor Phil Murphy signed an exemption into law in September 2025. And Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders did so in March 2025. The Worcester Red Sox are the only Massachusetts team covered by the minor league CBA. Massachusetts also has two minor league hockey teams, the Springfield Thunderbirds, AHL, and the Worcester Railers, ECHL, whose players are represented by the Professional Hockey Players Association and compensated under a CBA, but no similar exemption appears in a state law for hockey players. Senate Democrats are angling to put their version of the House Economic Development Bill up for a vote this month. And now it's time for another break.
You say you love a good book, that you enjoy listening to a good story that piques your interest, which challenges your imagination to explore places where it has never gone before? If so, then Audio Journal's Backyard Bookshelf is for you. Backyard Bookshelf is Audio Journal's award-winning book reading program that always has a local flavor, featuring books about New England as well as books written by local authors or native New Englanders, be it fiction or nonfiction. So join us, won't you? Just tune in every Friday at 4 p.m. and enjoy. That's Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal.
Welcome back. You are listening to a reading of the Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal. It is Wednesday, July the 22nd, and it is 11:30 in the morning. UMass Memorial increases planned Community HealthLink layoffs to 231. At UMass Memorial Healthcare Affiliate, Community HealthLink prepares to close. 104 more positions have been scheduled for layoffs, bringing the projected total to 231. The updated figures were released Friday as part of Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act data. The WARN Act requires companies with 50 or more employees to report planned layoffs to the state government at least 60 days before layoffs or a company closure takes place. UMass Memorial Health filed the updated layoff numbers on Wednesday. The layoffs are scheduled to take place by September the 16th. A detailed copy of the July 15th notice was shared publicly by Fitchburg Mayor Sam Squalia. According to the notice, 158 of the eliminated positions are union, and 73 positions are non-union. The newly impacted positions are concentrated in Leominster, with several other layoffs slated for Fitchburg and Worcester. They include jobs like case managers, clinicians, administrative staff, and administrative support positions. In a statement, UMass Memorial Health said Community HealthLink has been facing pressures for several years that have impacted its ability to operate its services. The healthcare provider said leadership is still working with other organizations and state agencies to find new operators for CHL services. Some impacted staff will be able to transition along with those programs. We are also supporting impacted caregivers by helping them identify other positions within the UMass Memorial Healthcare System or within the community partner organizations, said Christy Lee, a spokesperson for UMass Memorial Health. As a part of this process, Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act notices are legally required as positions end at Community HealthLink, and in many cases, transition to those new operators. CHL's priority is to ensure that our clients and all individuals seeking care across central Massachusetts continue to receive high-quality behavioral health services. Many CHL programs remain open, operational, and continue to take referrals. Layoff numbers have been increasing since CHL confirmed its planned closure in April. Originally, CHL planned to lay off 84 employees over the summer. That figure has increased multiple times. Several CHL programs have secured homes under other organizations. The fate of others has yet to be determined. UMass Memorial Health has published a website detailing the status of each CHL program. The CHL closure comes as UMass Memorial faces staffing shortages and financial difficulties. The entire UMass Memorial system had a $160 million operating loss in fiscal 2025. Next, Haywood, United Way granted $800,000 to offer subsidized child care to hospital employees. Haywood Healthcare of Gardner will begin offering fully subsidized child care to employees with the greatest financial need, thanks to an $800,000 state grant awarded to United Way of North Central Massachusetts. The United Way of North Central Massachusetts in Fitchburg was chosen to receive the funds as part of the Commonwealth Employer Child Care Innovation Fund. The nonprofit will partner with Haywood Healthcare, the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts, and Upwards, a California-based caregiver tech company. The funding is intended to boost workforce talent acquisition and retention. Accessing affordable child care has been a significant barrier to achieving both of these goals, said Haywood President and CEO Rosanna Penny. I have seen the incredible people of Haywood Healthcare face impossible choices, not because of a lack of a dedication, but because child care has become unaffordable and out of reach, Penny said in the Thursday announcement from United Way. Too often, employees are forced to step away from the workforce because they cannot make ends meet. With an overwhelming majority of our workforce made up of women, many balancing work and family responsibilities, this is deeply personal to our organization. This is also a regional economic issue, impacting our ability to recruit and retain a strong healthcare workforce. The Commonwealth Employer Child Care Innovation Fund awarded grants to four organizations this round: Berkshire United Way in Pittsfield, $400,000. Community Daycare Center of Lawrence, doing business as the Community Group, $550,000. Seaport Orthodontics, doing business as Seaport Smiles in Boston, $150,000. And United Way of North Central Massachusetts, $800,000. A private donor through the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts matched the funding for the Haywood program. Upwards will provide the platform employees will use to find the child care. For the past 3 years, our research of innovative shared funding child care models from across the country position us well for success on this grant, Kat Deal, Project and Analyst Coordinator of the Employers and Child Care Coalition of North Central Massachusetts, said in the announcement. Collaborating with technology partners and industry experts to create real child care solutions for working families while strengthening our regional workforce is so rewarding. The pilot program is intended to test employer-supported child care options to support workforce development and can be implemented in other companies and regions. Next, IPG to acquire French medical laser firm. Marlborough-based laser manufacturer IPG Photonics plans to acquire France-based Lumibird Medical for $343 million, a move IPG will use to grow its medical market portfolio. IPG expects the acquisition will add about $1 billion to its addressable market for advanced medical solutions, saying in a Thursday announcement, the transaction is expected to add a high-margin business to boost its earnings. The transaction is expected to close in the fourth quarter. LumaBird Medical's leadership in ophthalmology complements our strength in urology, which will create a scaled medical platform with opportunities to accelerate innovation, broaden our commercial reach, and deliver differential solutions for physicians and patients, IPG CEO Mark Gitton said in the announcement. We expect the transaction to strengthen our long-term growth profile and provide significant value creation. LumaBird Medical is a division of the larger LumaBird Group, which produces laser devices for uses in the defense, industrial, and scientific sectors. IPG intends to pay for the acquisition at the time of closing, funded by cash on hand. LumaBird could earn an additional $57 million if certain performance metrics are hit in 2026 and 2027. LumaBird Medical reported revenues of $128.36 million in 2025. IPG plans to acquire LumaBird Medical comes after it settled a long-running patent dispute with a German firm in May. Restaurant Depot looks to be the first business at WBDC's Green Tech Park. Restaurant Depot is looking to open a 50,000 square foot wholesale warehouse in the Worcester Business Development Corporation's Green Tech Park, the first tenant announced for the former Saint-Gobain campus redevelopment project. The Worcester Planning Board approved a site plan during its Wednesday meeting for the project, according to the video of the hearing. The location would be Restaurant Depot's second central Massachusetts location, joining a wholesale warehouse in Milford. Headquartered in Whitestone, New York, Restaurant Depot only sells products to members who are food service, deli, or nonprofit organizations. The fact the business won't be open to the general public allows it to operate in the Green Tech Park, as wholesaling is considered a business use that complies with the site's Manufacturing General 1 zoning. The Restaurant Depot location is slated for a 4.4-acre site in the industrial park, adjacent to I-190, and bordered by Store Street and Frontage Road. Plans for the site call for 171 parking spaces and 5 loading bays. Separately, the application details plans by WBDC to modify and widen New Bond Street, Store Street, and C Street as part of roadway and infrastructure improvements to accommodate bicycle and pedestrian traffic. Roberta Bryan, Executive Vice President at WBDC, said at the meeting, new public streets in Green Tech Park will allow local residents to travel through the area in ways that weren't possible while Saint-Gobain was in operation. The project will require approvals from the Worcester Conservation Commission. Joshua Lee Smith of Worcester-based Bowditch & Dewey is representing Restaurant Depot for this project. The announcement of the new Restaurant Depot site comes as restaurant supply giant Sysco has announced plans to acquire the company for $29.1 billion, according to Food & Wine. And now it's time for our final break.
Would you like to hear news from Blackstone Valley and Webster that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Thursday at 5 p.m.
Welcome back to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is 11:44 a.m. Worcester Airport sets passenger record. The Worcester Regional Airport served 231,000 passengers in fiscal year 2026, a record high under the Massachusetts Port Authority's ownership. We are happy that more and more passengers are taking advantage of the convenience of Worcester Regional Airport, and we are looking forward towards even more growth at the airport, said Massport spokesperson Benjamin Crowley. Passenger traffic increased 4% from the previous fiscal year. The airport's fiscal year runs from July to June. Massport specifically highlighted a significant increase in traffic for June. The state agency reported 17,600 passengers traveled through the Worcester Airport, a 16% increase from June 2025. Massport attributed the increase to additional flights and improving load factors. The surge comes as the airport's longtime director, Andrew Davis, retires in July after leading the airport for 18 years. Massport has owned the airport since 2010, taking over from the city of Worcester. Worcester's Affordable Housing Trust Fund awards four projects a $1.36 million. Four affordable housing developments are receiving a combined $1.36 million from the City of Worcester's Affordable Housing Trust Fund, supporting the addition of 74 units to the city's housing stock. The four awards came as part of the AHTF's spring funding round and support new construction, public housing redevelopment, and adaptive reuse projects, the city announced. Governed by a 9-person board, the AHTF was created in 2021 under the city's inclusionary zoning ordinance. Developers of projects with 12 or more units can avoid including any affordable units by contributing an amount equal to 3% of the project's construction costs to the trust fund. The third phase of the redevelopment of the Lakeside Apartments received $600,000 in the largest award in this round. Phase three of this project involves the construction of a new 103-unit, four-story building to replace what was the Worcester Housing Authority's oldest housing complex. First announced in 2022, the project is being led by a joint venture between Andover-based Tremont Development Partners and Newton-based E3 Development. An effort by the Beantown Companies in Waltham to redevelop the Haywood Boot and Shoe Company building in Worcester's Canal District received $585,000 from the AHTF. The project will see the vacant 19th century mill building redeveloped into 77 units, with 15 of those units income restricted. Five of the income restricted units are being supported directly by AHTF funding. The project will involve the construction of 3,691 square feet of commercial space on the ground floor of the building. The third phase of redevelopment of the Colony on Grove Senior Housing Campus received $100,000. This project at 485 Grove Street sees the replacement of 24 units with 52 newly constructed senior apartments, all of them income restricted. A development by Worcester-based ABG Real Estate looking to create three affordable rental homes at 96 Canterbury Street and 95 Southgate Street received $72,730. The project involves the construction of a two-family building and an accessory dwelling unit, both of which will be all electric and energy efficient. Now, from the editor, data is the new currency. Worcester Business Journal has published its annual book of lists for the better part of three decades, but about 2 years ago, we undertook an ambitious project to expand how we deliver this valuable data online. The efforts ramped up in 2026 as we worked with businesses throughout the region to feature significantly more companies and data points in the online portal. We have now created the go-to source for market intelligence about the Central Massachusetts business community. We call it the WBJ Data Center. While the printed book of lists has an enormous amount of information we want you to use throughout the next 12 months until the next issue comes out, the WBJ Data Center features more lists and companies than can fit in a single 84-page print edition. You can use our proprietary information to create your own custom list, and each business has a detailed profile. Of course, the printed Book of Lists edition includes a number of special features that will make you want to keep it around your office for the next year. The first is the cover, which is my favorite Book of Lists cover in my 11 years as WBJ editor. That bank vault door is from Old Commerce Bank Building in Main Street in downtown Worcester. If you know anything about the history of Worcester business community, you know that it's David Duddy Massad's old bank vault. Special thanks to the folks at Beacon Bank, which acquired Commerce in 2017, for allowing us to take that photo. And a big shout out to photographer Matthew Wright, whose work never fails to exceed all expectations. This book of lists features two new lists, largest wealth management firms and largest promotional product and sign vendors. Our readers have requested a wealth management firms list for the number of years in the promotional products list spun out of the research for WBJ's new wedding guide, We Do. Because of the book of lists shifts slightly with new and updated lists each year, it doubles as a status report on the Central Massachusetts economy. This year, I used ChatGPT as an extra copy editor for all the lists in this edition. Once it finished reviewing all the lists, I prompted it to write a 150-word summary on the region's business community. Here's what it came up with. Central Massachusetts has quietly become one of New England's most diverse and resilient business regions, combining world-class healthcare, advanced manufacturing, higher education, and entrepreneurship within an hour of Boston. Worcester serves as an economic hub anchored by UMass Memorial Health, UMass Chan Medical School, Worcester Polytechnic Institute, and a growing cluster of technology, life sciences, and professional services firms. Surrounding communities such as Marlborough, Milford, Framingham, Westboro, Hudson, and Leominster contribute thriving manufacturing, distribution, financial services, and commercial development sectors. The region is home to a deep bench of middle-market companies, many of them family-owned or employee-owned, alongside global employers like TJX, BJ's Wholesale Club, Waters Corp, Bose, and eClinics Works. Small businesses remain a defining strength, supported by active chambers of commerce, incubators, and venture capital investment. Rather than relying on a single dominant industry, Central Massachusetts' economy is built on a broad mix of established institutions and innovative companies, providing stability while fostering long-term growth. I couldn't agree more. Now, from that list, who is number one? What people and organizations lead their fields in Central Mass? Okay, here we go. Highlights. Largest female-owned, family-owned business, W.E. Ockerbaugh Company in Westminster. 1,500 local employees. Largest wealth management firm, Bartholomew & Company, Inc., Worcester. $5.9 billion local assets under management. Largest co-working space, Regis Framingham. Highest paid woman executive, Ashley McAvoy, Insulet Corp., Acton. Most popular tourist attraction, New England Sports Center in Marlborough. Highest paid CEO, Ernie Herman, the TJX Companies Incorporated Framingham. Largest vocational technical high school, Worcester Technical High School. Largest promotional products vendor, Cadwell Design and Sign Holliston. Largest college, Worcester Polytechnic Institute. Largest private high school, St. John's High School, Shrewsbury. Largest insurance agency, Marsh McLellan Agency, Worcester. Largest credit union, Workers Credit Union, Littleton. Largest minority-owned business, E-Clinical Works, Westboro. Largest woman-owned business, Worcester Restaurant Group. Largest grant-making foundation, MathWorks Foundation, Natick. Largest marijuana business, Green Gold Group, North Brookfield. Largest meeting venue, Wachusett Mountain Ski Area, Princeton. Largest commercial sale, Aria on the Row, Worcester. Largest commercial lease, 75 Plain Street, Hopedale. Newest Certified B Corporation, Advocates for Human Potential Incorporated, Sudbury. Now, banking for people, not profit, not Worcester Credit Union. People often ask us what the difference is between credit union and a bank. Both offer technical driven financial solutions. Both typically provide some amount of deposit insurance. Both are heavily regulated. Beyond those similarities, the differences take shape. Worcester Credit Union is a 501c14, the nonprofit version of a bank. And that's all the time we have for today. You have been listening to Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your old iPhone. This is Joanne reading with Mary. Thank you for listening.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
Are you or a loved one losing your vision? Mass Commission for the Blind can help reclaim your independence with new skills and assistive technologies. Partner with Mass Commission for the Blind to develop your vision for the future. If you're blind or visually impaired, find out if you're eligible to register for services to help you achieve your career and life goals. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCD. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.